Good evening, everyone. It's Wednesday night, and we are working our way through The Hidden Work by E.J. Gold. We're at the last chapter of the book. We've been through a remarkable road, and I think it's important for us to remember what we have done to get to where we are now. Many of us have probably read The Hidden Work in the past and have read through chapter 15, and basically, if you even were able to read through the darn thing, probably glazed over, particularly when you came to that tip-in called The Periodic Table of Angels, and you look at it, you stare at it, and you go, huh? Well, we went beyond that because we took the time to pick up the challenge that was posed to us by the author in chapter 14, where he talked about the possibility of actually getting together and studying forming angelic choirs and then working with the invocation of a particular angel. Now, one of the things that all of this by way of introduction to this chapter 15, which is, it's an important capstone chapter. And don't forget that the book, this is a book about prayer absolute. Now, one of the things I want to point out, and there's a few people in the room here, but I'd also like to see what other people think too. We had 7 different choirs present about 7 different archangels, about 7 different celestial halls. And for me, one of the primary things, there were 2 critical things that occurred. One was that the groups came together. All right? I'm calling that, and I think it's in the chapter, to combinality. We were able to combine. And that'll be important as we go through our work with this chapter. But so we were able to combine diverse individuals, some who've never, ever met each other. And, you know, I look and I know that I doubt that Lost Horizon has ever met Pathworld. Did you ever meet her? Physically?
Yeah.
Okay, how about Hawk Lady? Never. But did you work together?
Yes.
And did you work together well? Yeah, he says. And I don't think that you've ever met Harry.
Did I've met Harry, but I never
met. Never met Kathleen? Never. Did you meet
Mark
Circa, how about Gerald?
No, not in person.
So suddenly, somehow, these individuals came together who've never met each other. And I guarantee you, with the possible exception of a couple of the guys that are on the phone now and maybe Gerald Porter, these are not scholars. These are not academic scholars. So there was some element. And I'm carrying on about this because it's critical to remember the elements of this. And the elements are that people came together, and they came together with a common intention to do something. That's the first thing. The second thing, and this is going to be a challenge, and very few people will accept this comment. But the individuals that came together were also able to do a particular type of work. Does this make sense? You understand what I'm saying here? Not only were you, so you're willing, you had the right intention, but you were able to do it. All right? Yeah, I've been saying that throughout the last year and a month that we've been working on this book, that everybody that's here, I don't know who's on tonight, but everybody that's here are experience operatives. That doesn't mean that you're an enlightened teacher. Doesn't mean that you're an advanced student of some sort. But it also doesn't mean that you're nothing. It's the linear mind wants to go on, off, asleep, enlightened. There's a gradualism to it, and that's what we stuck our finger into. We brought that in, the capacity that we have. Now, I happen to know some individuals have capacities in particular areas that sometimes they don't like to face. But I do know how important it is for us to begin to accept our capacity and, in a sense, put ourselves in a position where that is needed. Okay, so that's combinality, that we're able to combine together. Now, the other part of the seven presentations, and this I would like direct feedback on, is did it not, for me, it appeared that the frequencies, the tonality of the invocation was fundamentally different, seven different times. You think so?
Yes.
Everybody here is saying yes. Harry?
I think so as well.
Yeah. And George?
Absolutely. Each one was a distinctive, each was a distinctive manifestation of a different archangel.
That's pretty profound. Susan, are you on? Susan was able to get deeply involved with two different archangels and also made that comment about how the different. I went to every single, I didn't go to every meeting, but I went to every group at least a couple of times as they were presenting, and it was like 7 days of the week, okay? That's how different it was. So there was something about the frequency of the invocation that was different. So all we need to say right now, we're not skilled enough to talk more about it. But we can see that, gosh, that was different. I mean, remember Kasiel? Or do you remember Haniel at the beginning? That's the point. And that's because we did that work together. Because we did that work together, it will allow us to understand the presentation that is chapter 15 quite a bit. So,
David, Susan is not on the phone, but she's not on the phone, but she is on the chat.
Okay, good. Most excellent. So it's just this idea that the tonality was markedly different. I'm going to read a couple of paragraphs, and then we're going to spin off and begin a dialogue between Silverdale and myself about a couple of things. Chapter 15, the periodic table of angels. Everything in nature is part of a single, continuous electromagnetic spectrum from angels all the way down to elements. The law of periodicity accounts for patterns and regularities throughout. The periodic table of angels is a shorthand way of notating this. Pull that out in your book and unfold it just so it's there and you can actually look at that table. And then, just for the background then, during the 19th century, Mendeleev arranged the elements in an order which showed regular, repeating patterns. patterns in their behavior and properties. This arrangement forms the basis of the periodic table of angels, which organizes them, now listen to this, according to their frequencies in hertz. The position of the angel in the periodic table indicates some of its properties and characteristics, just like the periodic table of elements. The periodic table of angels is divided into groups. So that's why I wanted to point out the distinctive nature of each separate invocation, that it was different. Well, pointing to that difference, you point to the table and you can say, okay, that means that was here. Here's the first hall. Here's the second, third hall, and so on and so forth. And you can begin to see that it fits into an array of frequencies, which it should. Doesn't it make sense that that's the case? You know? We've talked a lot over the years about the Tree of Life, and where the first three Sephiroth are presented, and they're beyond our understanding. We can't approach those, but it's the absolute descending from nothingness, from the void, into materiality, which is where we live. Okay, we're at the end. We're at the end of the trail here. Well, it's being asked, and everybody asks this question, don't we exist in all of the frequencies? The answer to that is yes and no. And that's not a joke. I'm not saying that in a joke. It is in us. We are God. We are the Godhead. There is no question about that. How often do we get there, though, in ourselves? Most of us are asleep most of the time. Therefore, the mechanicality of our historical personality dominates all the time. And we're elements then. We're things. We don't live in the world of frequency. So, is it possible? Absolutely it is. Is it possible in the blink of an eye? Yes, it is. What's virtually impossible is to stay there. That's the work. And that's part of the work that we're doing, is to become established enough in the essential self. This chapter, actually this book, in my opinion, assumes that you already know how to awaken the machine and to hang out in the essential self. Doesn't assume that the essential self is the most powerful thing in your life yet, but that you know how to get there. And I would say that is true for all of us that are here. I'm not sure everybody who's online, but that's not the issue. The issue now becomes, it's every time we think we've made one step, it's we look over the fence and we say, oh my God, there's another 50 steps. So it's the work has in part to do with us establishing ourselves, moving from the world of the historical personality to the world of the essential self and seeing with new eyes. So, yeah. Sure. We're in the entire tree of life, all the way up and down. We're little deposits of the Godhead right here. And so, what do you do with it? It's what is your work then? It's as if we've been gifted that, and we were gifted the historical personality too, by the way. We've been gifted that to try to create a new person, something new. You know, they say the new man, but the new person, a new creature that is no longer subject to the earth. And whole other topic. So in chemistry, periodicity occurs on the basis of atomic number. In angelology, periodicity occurs in the basis of frequency. The frequency determines where each angel appears on the scale. A period is a horizontal row of angels. There are seven periods in all. And the arrangement starts at the top left of period one and moves in order of increasing frequencies from left to right across each period in turn. Period one has only two angels, Metatron and Satan, and so on. To the right of the table, we find the seraphim, who are called the noble angels, because they are part of the first fragmentation of the absolute. So once again, it's trying to describe what is the fundamental nature. Lithium isn't on this. Yeah, we don't have the chemical correct. We don't. Silverdale, do you happen to have your printout there anywhere?
Yes, I do.
Okay, do you want to take over for a couple of minutes and just maybe read the first half of, or first two-thirds of that first page?
Absolutely. Just by way of background, if I could just remind the listeners that, to my way of thinking, this hidden work is an extension of Gurdjieff's trilogies. So you know I've harped on that a lot. And one of the points that Beelzebub makes in the book Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson is that each of us is actually a triune being comprised of three forces. And in the course of the book, Beelzebub describes one of the forces, which we would call our historical personality and its identification with the world around it. And as Beelzebub indicates quite remorsefully, sadly, we don't develop these other two forces, which are co-equal. That is to say, we don't develop the second force during the course of our lifetime, which EJ calls the essential self. That is the life force that is animating our organic existence. And nobody ever taught us how to identify it or how to develop it. And so it actually atrophies over time. Well, what EJ is attempting to do is, through his book, The Human Biological Machine, is to introduce us or remind us to this second force, which is an inherent part of ourselves, the life force, our essential self, it's called. And then the third force is nothing more than a blending of the first force and the second force after they're both equally developed and brought into a harmonious association. So with that kind of brief introduction, I'll read what Dave was referring to. In this final chapter of The Hidden Work, EJ presents to us a map of our own essential self and how it corresponds to and is a reflection of the essential self of the Absolute. So what we're learning in Chapter 15 is the Absolute as a primal tonic fractures and fragments his presence, and becomes the host of angels of varying degrees and frequencies and properties and so on. And all of and this essential self of the Absolute is immaterial before it actually enters into the atomic world. So
And in this way, it's a reflection, it's an indication that as we examine ourselves, yes, we have this same hierarchy of angels within ourselves. It's a part of our essential self. It's a part of that life force that's animating our organic existence. And the question is how might we begin to learn about our essential self? Well, the periodic table of angels gives us kind of some clues as to how we might do this. Anyway, continuing on, in so doing, EJ is precisely describing the means by which we might accomplish prayer absolute and perform the hidden work for our own evolutionary transformation into beings of a higher gradation of being and reason. And then I just, what Dave's referring to is that I took some of the, sentences from earlier in the book just to review where we have been as we enter into chapter 15, and one of them is off page 77, the summary of the chapter. If the organic biological machine and its moving centrum manifestations can be made passive, higher substances can be driven upward by the resulting negative force, and the astral body can be automatically activated. And so chapter 15 presumes that we have been able to shift the center of our gravity from the dominant electrical, organic, material field of the human biological machine and its tyrannical historical personality to the more subtle vibratory sensation of our essential self. That's how we identify we have an animating life force within us. We are able to gradually experience it as some kind of a sensation within ourselves. This is what enables us to begin the penetration of the periodic table of angels utilizing the principle of resonance, which it becomes an important point of this chapter. I then quote from page 93, the human biological machine is a microcosmic duplicate of the macrocosmic body absolute. Man and the absolute are identical, which is why man is capable of prayer absolute. But they are not exactly identical, and because they are not exactly identical, the human biological machine can assume the posture of angels and archangels, and most importantly, can assume the form of the first Adam, which is neither male nor female, and is the first great descending posture of the absolute. So my comment on that is that the essential self and presence of the absolute penetrates the whole of the creation, serving as the life force which animates, nourishes, and maintains the whole of the universe on every level. The periodic table of angels is a means by which the fragmenting of the absolute's essential presence can be annotated and used for our own benefit.
So, one of the things that we're talking about here is if we can activate, if we can make the historical personality more passive by the use of our special attention, then the essential self can become more active, right? And its field of sight, in a sense, is a vibratory field of sight. It responds to a vibratory principles which are laid out in the periodic table of angels. And that's what we've done over the last couple of months here, is we've experimented with that. The reason we responded so well to it, and there have been some, incredible free flow of information that came out. people would start studying an angel, and then suddenly they'd have this poem jump out of their mouth, or they'd sing something. Now, where did that come from? It's because they allowed themselves to be in the resonance of angels for those moments. That's actually what's occurring.
You know, David, I'd like to just try to illustrate this this way as well. If we think of ourselves when we were first born without any kind of a personality at all, our parents might, over the first month or two, begin to see some particular characteristics we have. We're quiet, or we smile a lot, or we goo-ga a lot, who knows what. But in any event, with the passage of time, our personality grows to function within the circumstances that comprise our environment. And so over a period of time, we actually begin to develop definite personality characteristics. And we also learn to identify other people's personality characteristics. I mean, this is just a natural part of growth and development. And some people might be particularly gifted at playing the piano or writing or art or running, or, I mean, you know, everybody might has some particular gift that's unique to their genetic makeup and their personal development. Well, in a similar way, as we begin to enter into the vibratory sensation of our essential self, of course, initially it's undeveloped and unsophisticated. But with the passage of time, as our essential self grows, we're not only able to identify particular aspects of the essential self, but maybe the essential selves of others, and then we might discover that our essential self has a unique gift of being associated with a particular angel or something like that. And we
Correct.
Can manifest those properties as well.
Exactly. And so the part of the instruction in chapter 14 was to scrutinize your own machine, the human biological machine, when you're under the influences of these angels. Do you remember that paragraph? In other words, what do I tend to do? You know, maybe I'm a blabbermouth and I go quiet. Or maybe I never say anything and I suddenly need to sing. Or we don't know the characteristics, but we do know, and we just barely touched on the concept of functionality and the fact that angels are performing a function. They are doing, they are the cosmic maintainers, as there's the janitors, there's the electricians and the plumbers. That's what they're doing. I think we started touching on that a little bit in when we studied Hanayal and some of the subsequent meetings, is that we started to see the functionality. I maintain that we are unique, that our essential selves do have a coloration towards something, and we're led to that. So we're led to that part of the periodic table of angels where that starts to manifest. And that's what I call you start coming into your own. You can see we're at the very beginning, but we are at the beginning. We're not at the end. We're not at the end, but we are in the beginning. That part, it's like I want to acknowledge that for us, okay? And I want to jump down to the very last paragraph on that first page. Do you want to go ahead and read that?
Sure.
We can visit.
Yeah, so this is off page 109. We can visit any exalted dimensions if we know the principle of resonance and have the will to awaken the machine and to produce the corresponding emotional, mental, and physical postures of higher dimensions. And so it is that the biological machine is referred to as the temple of the absolute.
So we can see that we're learning technique here. We're learning technique of mobility in the Bardo chambers. We're allowing ourselves to begin to touch into that area. And then how do you move there? What do you do? Oh, yeah, it was a really great space. That's it. That's the fact that you can get to that space is important. Okay, but that's like you walk in the door. But at some point, you look around and you recognize what space that you are in. And you can do it by this principle of resonance. So we leave the regular attributes of the human biological machine, you know, touch and you know the moving center, the emotions, the brain, and all of that stuff, and we go into to where the essential self operates. And how does it operate? It operates through resonance. It's looking around and going, oh, yeah, there. I want to go there. I need to go there. And some people are very, very able to move in that manner. They can move exactly where they're supposed to be. It's nothing that can be overtly talked about other than I know for a fact that it can happen. That sometimes a door will open up in a resonance manner. And some people know that that's occurred. I've had experiences where we're sitting in a big meeting or something, something's going on, and suddenly something happens, and you can see two or three people will, they perk up because they got it. It doesn't necessarily mean that there was anything critical or something like that. It's just that, let's just say, a tone wafted through the area and they picked it up. That's the practice then of resonance, the practice of it. I know that I keep coming back to, I don't know if Path World is on, but this is an individual that runs a labyrinth down in Southern California. Path World is on for 15 years or some darn thing. And, you know, I don't know how she's been able to do it and not drive her husband crazy. Or maybe she's succeeded in that. I don't know. The guy's an absolute saint. Every full moon, they have this thing that happens. And I guarantee you with this data that there is a specific resonance that she is making available to the individuals that come there. 15 years. But tell me now about something about doing your job. What's your job? She knows that part of it. The other part she's not ready to accept yet, but that part she does and has been doing. So that's an example. And other people like to go to these particular, you know, oh, I'm going to go meditate. Because at that point, they can touch into a resonance that's important to them. Gradually, as you study that kind of work, you'll notice yourself wanting to be there, in a sense, more and more, so that your meditation is you walk into the local health food store, and that's the beginning of your meditation. And you do the proper shopping and stuff like that. But you walk in, and you look around, and you know that you're in a labyrinth, but holding that, because you never know who you're going to meet or who you're supposed to meet or who's supposed to meet you.
David, you know, one of the distinguishing differences, to my way of thinking, between the organic experience and the essential self experience is that the organic experience is sequential and straight line in nature, so that we're constantly processing things in a straight line sort of way and trying to calculate the totality of the environment that the organic machine is passing through. Well, our essential self actually experiences life in a spherical way, where there's the totality of everything happening all at once and perceived, again, in accordance with resonance. So that's an important distinction, I think, too.
So we learn this. The absolute gift of the book, The Hidden Work, from EJ is that we learn that we can begin to operate in a different way. We've all read, I think all of us have at one point or another, some of the Carlos Castaneda work. And Von Juan is talking to Carlos. He says, oh, well, there's the tonal, and then there's the nahual. Ooh, you know, and it's so dramatic and scary and frightening and blah, 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 blah. Well, I mean, there's a lot of truth to that in a certain way, and it's also really dramatic. But what he's talking about is the electrical body called the human biological machine and its historical personality, and the electrical body called the essential self. If you stand in the world of the essential self, you are in a different world. It is true. If you don't believe me, then experiment with it. Walk into some place where you know you're going to fall asleep, but you fall asleep all the time. Maybe you go to work with somebody. And you get there and you set your computer up and you know you're dreading the next few hours and the dismal environment that you're going to be in. And so you do what you know how to do best. You go to sleep. You let the machine take over and you just somehow survive. But people's essential selves are alive and awake. They're alive and somewhat awake, I should say. So we don't know the effect we have on a space if we put our effort into bringing forth our essential self. I got an email from a friend, and he said he got into a big fight with his girlfriend, and it was all over, you know, like who's right and who's wrong. And I assured him that the answer was that I was probably right. And we went down for the, you know, we exchanged emails back and forth, and I said, he's going, I don't know how to resolve it, blah, 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 blah. I said, you got to think of it in a totally different way. Because when you were in that space with her, and you guys were going back and forth, you were both utterly asleep. And the quality of your inner state at that moment was shit. That's how to look at it. You were creating a environment of total manure. Regardless of what she was doing, she might be a jerk too. That's a different story, but it's not your story. So what is it, what environment are you creating into which not only are you living, but that you are bringing to others about you as well, right? Take that one on. For yourself. You don't need to do it for anybody else. Our work at this point is to, you know, there's that whole line in the Bodhisattva prayer. It says, you know, the number of beings is limitless. I vow to help save them all. how could you do that, right? I mean, there's like squirrels and stuff, and there's possums out there. Nobody who's ever looked a possum in the face wants to help a possum. I have. But, so how can you possibly help all those beings? By helping yourself. By changing your nature so that you are something different. Literally, something different. I love the analogy of the spherical world. Doesn't it feel right? I mean, I don't know if it's true, but it certainly feels right that it's not like corners and angles, and it's roundish. Feels roundish.
David, the organization of our brains reflects this very same reality. The non-dominant hemisphere is a parallel processor, and that's things that are all lined up in context. And the dominant hemisphere is a linear processor. Basically, that summarizes a whole lot of research on brain function and structure. But EJ talks about exactly the same thing in this book we're reading on page 73 through 75, about one side is God and the other side is man. And one side is the essential self, and the other is the biological machine.
And that's the position into which we were born. The individuals that are listening tonight or that will ever listen to this talk, have been fortunate enough to discover that we are two multiple, we are multiple electrical bodies. It's like a huge thing. Go read HBM again. Massive. It's like fundamentally different. Like all the Buddhists, you know, I used to hang out with Buddhists quite a bit. And you sit there and you meditate, and, you know, it's good. It's a good practice to do. But there's still not the concept that we are two different electrical bodies in the same package, in a sense. Coming forward. Where are we, George? I'm lost.
Dave, I think we're making progress down the road.
Okay, good.
You know, if we go to the top of my second page there, Dave.
Yeah.
On page 161, it says, in chemistry, periodicity occurs on the basis of atomic number. In angelology, periodicity occurs on the basis of frequency, which is something you really emphasize. The frequency determines where each angel appears on the scale. And so my comment to that was, we learn to identify our essential self as a vibratory sensation. Because we have succeeded in liberating the electrical field of the essential self from the human biological machine, we can begin to understand that angels also have their own vibratory frequency. And it's at that point in time that we then go to the principle of resonance. Can we, like playing a piano, go up a scale or go down to reach specific notes in specific octaves?
You know, when we were doing the Hani Al group came together, Susan is always sitting there bothering us with this question, you know, what is your true self? I mean, come on, that's kind of unfair. And she just keeps asking it over and over and over and over again. Oh my God. So who is your true self, right? And if you start to look at it in the context of where we are now and what we've discovered in the last couple of months, we can discover that it probably has something to do with frequency, a unique frequency that we all bring to the table. Because when you awaken the machine and you're focusing on the vibratory sensations of the essential self, that's pretty unique. There's something there that starts to be, and that is, you know, I don't want to put words into her mouth, but for me, that starts to become close to, that's the direction that my true self is in. It's the vibratory thing that I become when I'm there. And it appears to be unique.
We don't generally experience it in our ordinary life before we run across these ideas.
Yeah, I would say that's, we might notice things. You know, we might notice things around us. What was that? That was wild, wasn't it? But we have no context for it. One of the things that in the literature of the great Christian mystics, the church fathers always would say, that because they had the dogma of the Catholic Church, they were able to contextualize these remarkable experiences that they had. Because they, as Tamara was indicating earlier, they did reach up to the Godhead. They could do that. So their resonance was mobile enough to do that. But these were exceptional individuals. Exceptional. They didn't really live in the world like Teresa of Avila or Francis, St. Francis. This guy was Eckhart. I mean, these guys were like freakos. St. Francis of Assisi, this guy would say things like, he was a wild child. He would say things like, I see sounds and I hear colors. You know, it just went flip. So, he disengaged from his average, normal human biological machine. So we have a context, as George is telling us, we have a context now that we've read some of these ideas about where to put these experiences now. And I say once we have a context, then we can empower them just a little bit. I want to caution us that we're at the beginning. We're very much at the beginning. And the reason I know that is because I've been in some remarkable spaces with individuals who are able to, with great skill, navigate those spaces with accuracy that is only found by someone who knows how to interpret that periodic table of angels. I don't. I can voyage a bit, and I'm sensitive a little bit, but that doesn't mean that we're chop liver either. Okay? Go ahead, George.
I'd like to add something.
Susan! Hey!
I've got my phone working.
Hi there.
Hi there. Just on the matter of vibration.
Yeah.
And everything, it's whatever you're vibrating is what you're going to attract. And if you can allow yourself to be in the vibration with the angel, it's like allowing your frequency to change.
Allowing your frequency to what?
To change and to blend
right.
With the vibratory field of the angel.
Yeah.
I don't know how
yeah.
to, you know, I think it's really a matter of allowing.
Yeah.
You know, David, Susan makes a very good point here, which is that in our efforts and attempts to invoke angels for the purposes of learning from them, as with everything, if we're suggestible, then we can fall under their influence. So it's really a fine line between invoking them for observational purposes and allowing them to overly influence us.
Correct.
So we're trying to maintain our own essential nature while learning about a whole another dimension. I guess that's the way it is with when we meet with people. Who do we hang out with?
One of the things I read was really funny. It said, be careful when you're invoking angels because they're going to come. And then if you don't have your question ready, they might play tricks on you.
I don't know about that exactly, but I do know that if you are able to invoke it, one thing that will occur is that there's a vibratory resonance with that angel. And and I was looking for something. I don't know if you wrote it down, George, or if we talked about it the other night, but it's the idea that allowing yourself to be affected by the resonance of the higher angelic forces.
Yeah, and EJ makes that point actually earlier in this book, that the way that we actually evolve is the radiations of these higher forces as we resonate with them is what assists us in our own evolutionary transformation. It has a tendency to burn off the lower materiality of karma or whatever we've accrued living ordinary lives, and gradually we begin to find a new residence in another dimension, one filled with angelic beings, which are nothing more than fragments of the presence of the Absolute.
In the next book we're going to be doing, we're going to be introducing ourselves to the term healing radiations.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always pleasant, but there's the discipline of knowing, like Susan's saying, knowing where you are, and then allowing that radiation to do what it's in a certain way meant to do. Because if you can cleanse yourself of that dross, then maybe you can hang out there. And if you can hang out there, then maybe you should be hanging out there, because there's maybe work for you to do. I haven't asked Susan or Harry if there are any other comments. I've just been prattling along here.
There's not many, David. There was one, Winnipeg 9 says that it was very significant that the invocations did not depend on the physical on-site solar invocations of EJ, that these spaces, we did it together.
Yeah, that's important. I mean, we're all immensely thankful for the gift that EJ has given us of not only of his writings, but of his presence. His presence is spectacular. There's no question about that. But can we develop technologies that we can use together when he's not always available to us? And I think Winnipeg 9 is telling us maybe we did some of that. You know, we didn't hit the Grand Slam home run, maybe, but we opened the door. We got at least a ground single, okay? Go ahead, Harry.
There's a follow-up comment by Agni. The only sin is resistance.
Yeah, the only sin is not to do it, not to do some of these things. I'm so impressed by, as we read chapter 14 and I saw this laid out in front of us, I thought, wow, will people even want to do this? Got quite a response. And a lot of hours went into that. It's the doing of it that is the magic. That's the mystery. Not the data. The data is all there. You could get any book on any mystery that you can conceive of. All the old mysterious books on the Kabbalah, the alchemical works by John Dee, you can get all of those. You can get interpretations about them. So, do one thing. Because it's in the experience of doing and knowledge that's the alchemical process. We think, oh my God, that's alchemy. Don Juan's out there with his little mezcalito and his little fumito and his all this stuff. We don't have that, do we? But we have the ability to focus, to bring forth our attention, and to work together. And Winnipeg 9 is saying, half these people don't even live anywhere close to each other. Where the hell is Mark Circa? Somewhere up in Nome, Alaska, I think. Or, we had that one fellow, Peter, from Denmark for a while. That crazy would come in. It was 4 a.m. And it worked. Okay? So part of it is finding ways to create opportunities to work together. And this whole thing is about prayer absolute and Hawk Lady and Path World did those wonderful cards. I've got them all over the place. And they're very useful. So,
we have a comment from Winnipeg 9.
Thank you. Go for it.
He says, do one thing. Show up every day wherever you are.
Yeah.
Yes.
I don't know if we made any progress on chapter 15 and the periodic table of angels or not. My intention is to complete chapter 15 next week. The summary that George did, I will post it on the website. It's as good as the other stuff he's done, which is really good.
Yes.
And we really thank you for that. A lot of work there, George. Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
And George, you're the perfect person to do it. I'm so glad you're in our group.
Me too.
Well, hey, listen, I'm happy we're all in this group. I get a lot out of it myself.
This guy's a scholar of the first order when it comes to the work of Gurdjieff and E.J. Gold. And yet, he's made some significant comments about the invocational effect of these archangels on him. That's part of the principle of resonance and allowing yourself the willingness to be subject to those radiations. That's a good thing. So why don't we call it a night? Right, we'll stop it for right now, and I'll get my guns in order. I'll post this what he's written, and we'll try to conclude for ourselves next week. Then I'm thinking that we'll probably take a couple of weeks off, and then we're going to start in on the ADD. Pardon? With prayer absolute? Yeah, which we do tomorrow morning at 7 a.m. It means I have to get up before my beauty sleep is complete. Let's see. Is it
maybe
in here?
We want to end the class with the prayer absolutes.
Great idea.
The final.
Well, we'll end this class with the prayer absolute and the next class, okay?
Even better. Twice as good.
Even better, she says. Listen to that clear tone. It's so nice. Okay. Hang on a second. Hang on. Ready? In motion, bowing, my presence comes to thee. Humbly with heart alive, my presence awakens to thee. With clear mind, my presence comes to know thee. With pity for thy suffering, my presence becomes aware of thee. With yearning, my presence wishes to comfort thee. In ignorance, my presence serves thee. In contemplation, my presence recognizes how to serve thee. In mystery, my presence is a comfort to thee. In form and formlessness, my presence becomes thee. Thank you for coming tonight. We'll see you next time. Good night.